This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
We are 3 days away from the start of the NFL draft, and the Orioles lost by a football score yesterday, which makes it a perfect time to add out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Our own Cordell Woodland, who covers the Orioles and Ravens for us here at The Fan, joins us now. And Cordell, on a scale of 1, it's early and there's nothing to worry about, to 10, this season is a disaster. Where are you on the Orioles after what we saw yesterday?
Yeah, I'm at about somewhere between an 8 and a 9, honestly, at this point, because, I mean, you look at this team and the pitching is what it is. You knew that coming into the season, and you definitely know it now with Eflin on the IL. You don't even know if we'll see Grayson at any point this year at this point. And Morton might as well not even be there the way that he's playing. So the pitching is what it is, but offensively, they can't hit anybody. I mean, that was a bullpen game for the Reds yesterday, and you wouldn't be able to tell watching the Orioles players up at the plate. So I just think that they're a flawed team all around that doesn't do anything well these days. And even if the offense does wake up by some miracle and they are able to carry this team for a little bit, they can't do it for 2 to 3 months, you know, until this rotation gets put back together. So I just look at this team right now, and even in the long-term picture for this season, I'm kind of out of hope for them.
And look, we can go back, and we've been doing this on this show for quite some time, going back to July the 1st of last year and looking how, even from the offensive standpoint, they're not even above league average in any of the key metrics, like to let alone say they're top 5 or top 10. They're not top 15, top 18 in a lot of this stuff. Their walk rate is still pretty atrocious this year. And Cordell, like, the things you can't quantify, like Austin Wins looks like every at bat for him back here is game 7 of the World Series, but these guys don't seem to get up for more than one game a week, and that's usually after they got their ass kicked the night before. Like Austin Hayes comes in here with a chip in his shoulder. Hoffman, who never even played for him but almost signed with him, comes in here, and like, these guys, seems to me, even Taters has a big series here. Like, they seem to be more up for the fight to take it to the Orioles than the Orioles are now that they're the hunted and not the hunter.
Yeah, I mean, they seem, I don't want to say that they've looked like they're on cruise control, but I mean, I think lack of emotion has been their problem for a while now. Honestly, if you could go back the last couple of years, how many times have we talked about guys getting plunked at the plate and nothing happening, you know, and how many times have we talked about, you know, them getting kind of gypped, and it still happens with some bad umpiring at times and how they'll say his thing from the dugout, but the lack of fight, the lack of emotion has been a problem for them for a while. And even now, I mean, you look at the clubhouse, like, who is that guy that's going to get in somebody's face? And I had somebody ask me the other day, like, who's the guy, do they have a guy that's going to stand up in the middle of the locker room, like, look, we need to go out there and win this bleeping game today. Maybe O'Hearn, maybe, you know. Other than that, I don't know if there's anybody that's like, you know, going around pushing people to the limit and, you know, challenging guys, challenging themselves. I don't know if they have that vocal leadership right now. Obviously, what Sed is doing this year, you know, has been great. He's leading by example. But I don't know what they need. But definitely, like you're pointing out, some of the former Orioles that have come back here and had good games, i.e. Austin Wins and Hayes this past weekend, it just seems like these guys just aren't up for the fight. And I saw a quote, I think, from Jacob Calvin-Meyer today about Westberg yesterday after the game, you know, talking about how this should kind of force them to get their act together, getting embarrassed yesterday at home on Easter. I don't know, man. I don't really have a lot of hope that all of a sudden they're going to come out and start scoring 15-plus runs.
So, Cordell, where do we go from here? Do you let Craig Morton, the old quarterback, Charlie Morton, is he going to the bullpen? Are you DFAing him? What do you do? The guy, most people think they have to make a move to wake everybody up, but what is there to do?
That's the thing. It's like, what do you do? They're boxed in right now. I mean, they gave the guy $15 million to be here, and he isn't even a shell of what they were hoping to get. I mean, this has been downright embarrassing and pitiful to watch Charlie Morton out there, honestly. I don't know if sending them to the bullpen or all of a sudden change things for them. They need to just figure out what their rotation looks like in general right now. It's hanging on by tape, where people are hoping to see Kyle Gibson at some point soon and hoping he can help right the ship. That's just where we are in this dynamic right now. That's why I'm saying, like, even if the offense was producing, I don't think that they could produce consistently enough to really carry this team the way that they need to. They just don't have any answers. If we're talking about starting rotation wise, they have the worst starting rotation in baseball. Charlie Morton is a big reason why, but honestly, even if Morton was playing better than he is right now, I don't know if that's enough to save it. So to answer your question, I don't know. I guess if you want to keep him on the team, you start looking at all options, including sending him to the bullpen. But they have bigger problems than Charlie Morton. He just happens to be one of the biggest issues right now.
Is there part of you, because you're there a lot, that at some point Hyder cracks a little bit and it's just like, hey, man, like, I'm playing the hand I was dealt. Like, I feel like he's tiptoed up to that line a few times, even the way he's sort of talked about Morton. You know, I've only had him for five starts. Like, is there some point where you think the pressure and the fact that he's having to wear this publicly while, you know, Elias comes out and pops into the dugout once every 6 weeks, you know, to send out whatever messaging he wants to send out. But do you think there's a chance that we start to see a little different side to Brandon Hyde here?
I mean, like, you, to your point, it's already kind of started to be that way. I mean, it's not totally back in the days of the 100-loss seasons, don't get me wrong, but there's not many smiles in those presses anymore. You know, there's not a lot of jokes being said. It's having to try to come up with some sort of answers. And even Hyde, before the Morton start, basically letting it be known he needs some sort of outing from Morton. He needs him to eat up some innings because their bullpen is taxing. Even going to yesterday after the Morton start, and he's like, you know, that was embarrassing. It's disappointing that we weren't able to get the innings that we need from Charlie. He sees it. I mean, he's living it right there. So I don't know if he'll just flat out just have a whole meltdown at the mic. I don't anticipate that happening.
Why don't you guys ask my boss that question, kind of thing?
You know, yeah, I don't know if we'll get any. I don't expect him to throw Elias necessarily under the bus. But I do think he is starting to definitely lean into, like, look, we're watching the same game. You guys know the players that I have at my disposal just like I do. I think it's to that point now, especially pitching-wise, to where, you know, it's right in our faces.
Cordell, before I let you go, draft 3 days away, you got any feel, any idea, any thoughts on what position the Ravens, if they stick at 27, where they might be looking?
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to bet it'll be on the defensive side of the ball. I think if Malachi Starks is there, I really think that they'll run that card up there and hand it in. I don't know how they rank these edge rushers or even these more so the interior defensive linemen. It's supposed to be a bunch of those guys in there. a bunch of first-round talent, starter caliber interior defensive linemen. So depending on how they have them ranked, maybe they go there. But in my mind, I think if it's three positions, I think it's either going to be safety, corner, and third is probably going to be somewhere on the interior offensive line because they need a lot of depth there. They need depth on both sides, but I get a feeling with the way they love those offensive linemen, they'll probably put that ahead of D-line, especially if they feel like the best player available is on that side.
You and Beltway, Ben, before the draft starts on Thursday?
Yep, 6:30 to 8:00. So hopefully, you know, maybe the Orioles have won a game or two by then against the Nationals. We'll see. I think that'll be a tough series for them two out there. I mean, look, well, you can't pitch. Every series is tough. So we'll see what's happening. But obviously, yeah, we'll be talking a lot of draft.
Thanks, buddy. We'll
Mitchell
chat next
Parker,
year.
Yeah. Slow throwing lefty. I mean, if you want to talk about exactly who they don't want to see, it's Mitchell Parker.
Yep. I mean, and they're one of the worst offensive teams in the league against lefties in general these days. But like you said, those soft tosses. And Mitchell Parker's been solid for the Nationals to this point this year. Their rotation in general has actually been okay for them at times. But, yeah, I'm expecting there to be a little bit of a struggle for them the next couple of days.
Thanks, buddy. We'll listen to you Thursday, and we'll talk next week.
Appreciate it, guys.
Hey, coming up next, we get to the Ravens, a little Purple Rain, and who are the legitimate options for the Ravens, assuming they stay at 27 at defensive line and edge? We're going to tell you next here.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
A fan.
I don't plan on watching every pick. It'll probably be on. I'm not gonna be like actively watching. Maybe I'll watch when the Ravens pick, but don't really have a huge preference on who they pick or where. You know, they have done a great job before I was even born, so I'm gonna let them handle that, and I'm gonna play football and do my job. Probably be with my friend Nick Jackson, who plays for or played for Iowa. Had a really good pro day, so he'll probably be with him around that weekend. But yeah, I'm not gonna be up tweeting about it probably.
So Kyle Hamilton asked what his preference would be for the Ravens in the draft. We'll hear some more audio from Kyle Hamilton, Roquan Smith, Tyler Linderbaum tomorrow. But he said he doesn't have a preference. But we've been discussing, we think it's going to be their O-line or a defensive player. By the way, some housekeeping. The Ravens have announced that our Darius Washington signed his restricted tender, so he's back in the fold. Obviously, he had to, Friday at 5 o'clock for somebody else, but he's now officially back. But, Jason, assuming it's a defensive lineman slash edge, who are some realistic options for the Ravens?
You know, I am pretty firmly of the mind now that the D tackles are going to be picked through pretty substantially by the time we get around to the Ravens and the edge as well. And look, both safeties could be gone. So, a lot of what we did the last few weeks could end up being an exercise in futility. And there's a wide receiver or an offensive lineman sitting there. Who that's where the value is, and I would expect they'd be trying to trade down in those scenarios, and it just might not. Takes two to tango, and maybe it doesn't exist, or maybe somebody trades up for a quarterback, and the Ravens make a whole lot of hay on Friday. I think the idea that a Shamar Stewart or a Derek Harmon would be there is poppycock. I think those guys are gone, maybe both by the middle of the first round, in all honesty. Walter Nolan, another one. Some people at the beginning of this process might have been talking about late one, early two. I think Walter Nolan is one of the, might be the third D tackle off the board, maybe even the second, depending on on how this goes. I think Kenneth Grant, the run stuffer from Michigan, not Graham, the sort of do everything D tackle, who I think will go in top, the top 10. Seven. Could be there. I don't know that they want to take, you know, a Brody Washington replacement that high when there's a whole lot of Brody Washington replacements that they really, really will like, probably even in the fourth, fifth round, that type region. So I do think the pass rusher out of Boston College has a shot to be there. And if he is, I think they run that pick in and they call that a day. You know, some of the kids who have character issues, I'm not sure. I don't think any of us know exactly where the Ravens are, you know, vis-a-vis. There's clearly no zero tolerance policy, but what is
my understanding,
the potential stomach for kids who have Title IX violations and accusations?
I'd be shocked if Mike Green is on their board.
Then I don't think he'd be there, but if he were, I don't know that that would make sense for them. There's always the possibility that they take a corner. The closer we get to this draft, I talked to three GMs over the weekend, an NFL head coach, some people who are scouting directors or highly involved in their team scouting. I don't hear people stumping for some of these corners the way you normally do.
Sure.
I don't think they're as excited about this class, but the Ravens trust their evaluations in general, and certainly with corners, they know they can never have enough or too many, and they've done a pretty good job selecting them in various rounds and various sizes with some differing sort of carrying or dominant characteristics or dominant traits. It's not always all the same type guy. So if the top two safeties are long gone, and it's a corner sitting there, I would never discount them taking that. But I have a hard time thinking that we're not, if they stay at pick 27, that we don't have at least four or five D tackles off the board and at least four or five edge off the board.
As you pointed out, this is not a great corner class, but like, I guess Will Johnson's the number one corner on the board, but he's sort of projected as a mid first round guy. So if he's sitting there at 20, if he slips, because everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I do think he's probably going. Obviously, Travis Hunter's going second overall.
Yeah, I'm not counting him yet.
But yeah, I mean, after that, it really gets into some differing territory. Like, I had a GM tell me, and this is a GM who needs a corner, and I don't think he's like lying to me because I'm not going on TV like I used to spew all these lies. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just doing my reporting at the Washington Post. I mean, this guy I have a really good relationship with. Like, this Jahdi Barron kid, who some people have going 11th overall, he's like, I don't have a first round grade on.
Texas kid, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I still am not convinced that somebody's taking him in the first round because I definitely wouldn't. So Now, that doesn't mean that that's how the Ravens evaluate him. And that's a kid who I think it's not out of the realm of possibility, even though all these mock drafters have him, you know, going in the high teens. I don't know that that's going to be the case for him. He's someone who might still be there. And look, could there be four quarterbacks in the first round? When I went home Friday afternoon when we got off the air, I would have said no. Maybe people are just filling me with poppycock, but after having all these conversations with people who, again, I don't think have much to gain by spinning me, I think four quarterbacks and three receivers could go. And if they do, and most of those are before the Ravens pick, then there will be some defensive players sitting there who they love. I'm still not convinced it's going to be a tackle or an edge because they might just still be picked through.
Hypothetically, do you enjoy being filled with poppycock?
There's worse things that I've endured.
Yeah.
These days, I enjoy that more than watching the Orioles play baseball.
That's a very good point. And what a segue, Jason, because coming up next, we just endured something special baseball-wise. What an Easter it was. Orioles lose 24-2 to the Cincinnati Reds. They are off today, getting ready to play the Nationals tomorrow. Time for a little necessary roughness next here on The Fan.
Yeah, I mean, I've been with Charlie for five starts. So, you know, he's got a track record of having a really good career and, you know, right now it's he's having a tough time. The command's not, you know, he walked a bunch today again and just had a tough time getting through. I mean, a day we really desperately needed some innings. That was a challenge.
That was Brandon Hyde after the game yesterday. After the game Saturday night, he talked about the fact we need Charlie to get us some innings. We really, the bullpen, what, they used nine pitchers in the 9-5 win on Saturday. Charlie Morton got seven outs and gave up seven runs. And now the ERA is almost to 11. He walked two guys in the first inning, even though he didn't give up a run in the first. Quite frankly, he looks like a guy who knows he's done. Yet he goes out there every fifth day and gets beat up, essentially.
I mean, look, last year, if you looked at the advanced metrics, he was in the bottom 7th percentile of all major league pitchers in pitching run value, which is the StatCast sort of cumulative register of everything he does. He was in the bottom 6% in fastball and the bottom 5th percentile in off-speed pitch. The one plus thing he had going for him, his breaking ball, and by that I mean his curveball.
Yes.
His breaking ball value was in the top 64th percentile. It was above average. It was firmly above average. It was his saving grace. There was nothing else in his repertoire. Not his walk rate. He caught a lot of barrels. Not the exit velocity. He had one thing going for him. He had a curveball that the league batted 200 off of. We talked about it a lot this offseason, with an expected slug off the curveball last year of 240. The league is slugging 800 off the curveball this year. They're slugging 800 off the curveball. It was a problem for him from the beginning of that first start in Toronto through now. The problem is everything else other than his four-seamer is garbage too. And, well, they're going to start hitting the four-seamer. They have started hitting the four-seamer for a little more damage. And that's only going to continue if they keep running this out there with a guy who knows he's cooked, throwing pitches that they seem to know are coming and are having no difficulty picking up and crushing.
It's fooling no one.
No, I mean, look, right now the league's batting 455 off his cutter. It's batting 385 off his changeup, 444 off his sinker, and 400 off that once unhittable curveball. It's over. It's a shame. You could try to hide him in the pen, I guess, for a little while. Maybe you try to fudge it as he's your $15 million replacement for Suarez as the right-handed.
Yeah.
You know, the right-handed long man. It's hard to put lipstick on this pig. And look, I don't think Sagano's going to be even a league average starter for them also. So it's problematic. I did watch Kyle Gibson pitch in Aberdeen yesterday. Yes. I mean, he's facing high A kids. Like, he's facing kids, you know, some of them a year out of the draft. So it's hard to draw major conclusions. He bamboozled them for the first three innings and looked like he, you know, might throw a no-hitter. He ended up needing 78 pitches to go six. And he got, there were some hard hit balls and some hard hit balls from the right side, right on right, which I didn't think I'd see, including a kid, Jesus Baez, a Mets prospect, take one deep. That was a no doubter as soon as he came off the bat. I felt like the breaking ball was coming out of his hand against righties a lot of times as a ball. You could see it as a ball out of the hand. And second time through, the kid stopped offering it that stuff and they got deeper in counts and then they did some damage. It was better than Charlie Morton. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And I think, honestly, GG, as desperate as they are right now, 78 pitches is 78 pitches. They probably need to get Kyle Gibson in their rotation this weekend. I don't know that he needs to face, you know, another set of AAA batters. I think he's as close as they have to the cavalry right now, and he should be here. Kyle Brnovich, one of the many arms they got from the Angels and one of the many trades they made with the Angels.
Trade.
He's come back from his own Tommy John. He struck out 24 in his first 17 innings at Norfolk. Like, do I think he's the answer? No. I mean, the league's batting over 270 against him, and I don't know that the swing and miss is going to play as much at the major league level, but they might need to start getting cute about openers. They might need to start getting more creative about how they patch the nine innings together. Because they wasted money on Charlie Morton, and we all know that.
Do you read into them moving Gibson to Aberdeen at all, like keeping him closer to Baltimore? Because that was my reaction when they.
I do. Yeah, and look, I don't know if there was a forecast potential for Norfolk as well. I didn't pay that much attention to them this weekend. If they were worried about them getting rained out, they wanted, like, it was a beautiful day yesterday here. They wanted to make sure he got his work in. But I also think we're close enough to the point where I think if. And look. I was kind of interested to see if they try to push him to 85, would they try to push him to 90? The fact that he left, 78 was clean. Like, they didn't pull him from an inning or anything. He got through that final inning, and we're kind of waiting to see, does he come out for more or not? The fact they got him out when they did, I think they're about ready to see what it looks like at the major league level, because it couldn't be worse than Morton. But the velo wasn't great, and again, I'm telling you, the deeper it got, the more they saw him.
Quickly, Brandon Young on Saturday, and I appreciated the fact that he recovered a little bit.
Yeah.
But he did give, at one point he gave up seven straight base runners. That's not acceptable.
It's not a good Reds lineup. Just because they crushed the Orioles, if you watch baseball like I do every night, you will find the Guardians crushed the Orioles. The Guardians aren't going to be going around crushing a lot of people. So, yeah, I think Brandon Young was hittable. I think he He did seem to battle. Like, I didn't get the sense that he was like over his skis or he was totally freaked out. I just think it was a big learning curve. Like, oh man, this is how my stuff plays here. Like, even a bad major league lineup is not going to offer at that. Ooh, that was a pitch I got, you know, swing and miss on, in the International League. They're spitting on it. He's going to get more opportunities,
yes,
because they don't have starting pitching right now. I don't know, Gigi. Like, yeah, there were a couple innings there where he was one pitch away from having to be pulled.
Can we just make a point?
We're grading on such a curve now. I mean, we're not. This is supposed to be a competitive team that said they're trying to win, and this is how we're sussing out their starting pitching.
That's what I wanted to get to. They made this bet. Like,
of course they did.
They could have spent $27 million a year for 3 years on a Nathan Eovaldi.
Yes.
They could have been more aggressive and gone out and traded for Garrett Crochet.
Yes.
And put real pitchers in this rotation. But the only thing they did was they made a half-assed attempt to re-sign Corbin Burns.
Yes.
And then pivoted to 41-year-old Charlie Morton and Tomoyuki Sugano, who had never pitched in the major leagues before.
They're smarter than everybody else. But I'm just here to tell you, all you had to do is go to Baseball Savant and look at Charlie Morton's 2024 percentile rankings. Bottom 7% in pitching run value. Bottom 6% in fastball run value. Bottom 8% in off-speed run value. He had one pitch going for him, the curveball. If that goes, there's nothing else. It's gone.
We'll come back at the text of the day, preview tomorrow's show, and get you ready for Infinity Sports Radio at 6 here on The Fan.
Gotta admit, Beltway Ben, I'm a little relieved there's not an O's game tonight. I don't know about you, but I kind of could use this reprieve. Now, no minor league baseball on Monday, so I don't love that part of it. We got two interesting NBA games. I like the Clippers, and I like the over in the other game. Not sure if you're on anything. But I'm okay sitting out Orioles baseball tonight.
Especially after yesterday. It's a definitely needed off day. And then, I mean, if you come back from the weekend and lose two to what you viewed as the little brother for recent years, that will be pretty embarrassing.
What if the little brother is more up for it than big brother?
The little brother also has won a World Series more recently. So,
James Wood, I wonder if he's going to be leading off. Maryland kid having a monster season.
Oriole fan. Grew up an Oriole fan.
Part of their big trade, obviously, with the Padres there for Soto. And boy, Mitchell Parker, the exact kind of lefty. That profile gives them fits. So we'll see. A day off, which usually isn't good for them. Going into a junk ball and lefty, usually not good for them. Maybe they'll reverse trends. But one trend that's not going away, Beltway Ben, is the text of the day. Oh, I like it. Little windows.
Text today is sponsored by Oarsman Automotives, driven by OarsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Oarsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OarsmanCars.com. Text today comes from Jeremy in Baltimore, who's also talking about the Orioles. Funny that Masson offers us this package after one of the most unwatchable games in the team's history. Probably not even worth it.
Timing is everything. Look, I don't know that we'll be privy to what this does for them from a revenue standpoint, how many people cut the cord to go to them, how many people who previously weren't consuming Oriole games at all now decide to do the $19.95 a month or the $90 for the rest of the year. But I'll tell you this, I bring it up a lot for good reason because it'll stick with me. That many empty seats for a playoff game when you could get in that stadium for $5, $10, $15, boy, that seemed to me to be the market talking. So I would suspect that that's reflected a little bit in the fervor or lack thereof for people running out to subscribe to this who weren't already consuming Orioles games on Masson some other way. But what do I know? I do know that as soon as we get out of here, it'll be Infinity Sports Radio taking over. No Young Bucks tonight. But we will have Ben and Cordell on Thursday night prior to our draft coverage. So you guys will be squeezed, I guess, between us and them.
Yeah, 6:30 to 8:00.
6:30. Well, that's not squeezed at all.
BBT is 5:30 to 6:30.
BBT 5:30 to 6:30.
We're 6:30 to 8:00.
So that's a good run. So yeah, you guys will be there to take everybody up until Ken Wyman and Vinny Serrato doing the draft coverage here, and we'll see what the Ravens do then. Tomorrow, we will be joined by our buddy Mike Bordick, who joins us 3 o'clock every Tuesday. Our friend Cynthia Freeland, what does she think the Ravens will or should do in the first round? We'll find out. She is obviously on NFL Network and NFL.com. And Mark Zuckerman, who's covered the Nats forever for Masson, what does he think of the chances of the little brother winning the Nats Cup? Certainly the Orioles aren't winning many series these days. So there's that. Hope everybody has a great night. I believe T-Bone will be back with us tomorrow. Gigi will definitely be here. I'll be here. Beltway Ben will be here. And hey, O's can't lose tonight, Ben. So we got that going for us.